Boom, it's another episode of Sacktown Talks by the Nooner. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jabron, you can't stop crazy Maciel, here with the best political analyst in the game, Scott Lay.
How you doing, brother? Oh, it's a beautiful autumn out there. I was sitting outside Chicory, having some iced tea. Everybody's coming out nice and happy. Like, people come across from the Capitol wearing a tie, and you're like, what the hell? It's October.
Yeah.
Get out of the tie already.
It's
I mean, even Gavin was signing bills last week. You know, he was all casual with the sleeves rolled up.
Well, you know, they're doing the Andrew Yang.
Yeah, they are. I don't see Gavin putting a hat on, though.
That's funny. The
I mean, could you see Gavin put a hat on that?
The Yang gang has started calling 1,000 a Yang. Like, oh, I got... Dude, these guys are crazy. Yang gang, I'm with you, but they're really funny. They're like, oh, I got a car repairs coming up. It's going to be just over a Yang.
So it's 4:45 on Friday, October 18th. And so is your boy Yang still talking into the mic?
He's still
10 going. Hours.
Hey, who else in presidential candidate history has ever done something like this?
Well, I mean, technology is a little bit new.
But is it a good thing?
If they signpost it, tell me what the hell is in 10 hours. I'm not going to sit there and watch 10 hours. I'd love to hear specific policy prescriptions, and he could go, like, he could knock everybody out of the water on policy, but nobody's going to, I mean, people have been working today, so nobody's going to go home and watch 10 hours. I mean, 3 hours of a flipping debate last week, this week. Feels like it was last week.
You know, it's so funny. This is sort of what I was talking about last week, where it's like you no longer have to part. And let me tell you something, as much of a Yang booster as I am, and like, I know you're nonpartisan, you don't endorse. I endorse Yang gang.
I'm going to find a candidate.
I want my money. I want my freedom dividend. Mm-hmm. But you know, this is just being totally honest and totally critical. He doesn't shine too brightly on the debate stage. You know, why
he's been doing better.
He's been doing better, but it's not the best forum for him.
No.
Right. Why? I've gone back and taken another look at those Republican primary 2016 debates.
Oh, God.
Fuck. How masterful was Trump?
Oh,
how masterful was Trump? The way he gaslighted that entire stage of like the 12 strongest candidates. And, you know,
I mean, it's crazy. Half of them are going to be running next year. Yeah. You see, John Kasich today came out and said that not only does the House need to impeach Trump, but the Senate needs to hold hearings. Basically, John Kasich announced that he's running for president next year. Look for Marco Rubio to jump in. Rick Scott from Florida, the governor of Florida.
Yeah.
All of these Trump allies. I mean, Kasich was never a Trump ally, but the others, they're going to break ranks quickly.
Let me linger on these two. The presidential stuff is hot, which is, I think, why we're starting with this.
And we're going to end with this, too. About California specifically.
Let me go back to Trump 2016, though, just real quick.
Yeah.
I think part of it's like his apprentice days, and you know, he was a shareholder in WWF for a long time. Mm-hmm. He's literally been in the ring and like hitting people with steel chairs.
It's WWE.
It's WWE.
Remember, they lost the trademark dispute with the World Wildlife Federation.
Yeah, to the panda folks. Yeah,
the panda folks.
It's so funny, not so tough now. Huh? Hey, but you know, Trump has this really good understanding of when people are on camera and when people aren't on camera. Of course, because he had more stage time than all those other candidates combined, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he did this one thing. I think it was to Marco Rubio or to Ted Cruz, where he was like, did you hear what that lady said about Ted Cruz? I'm not going to say it. She said he's a pussy. And then but he understood that the camera's right on him. He understood that the camera's right on him. So what happens is Ted Cruz tries to defend himself, but he's trying to talk into the scene from off camera, which is inherently a position of weakness, right? So Trump is a...
Klobuchar was doing that on Tuesday
Klobuchar was doing that too, and it's inherently a position of weakness, right? When you're off camera and you're trying to talk in from the sidelines...
I think Beto was too. It's like, shut up, dude.
It's the classic.
Get away.
If you're not on camera, you got to shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
That's my first one. Sorry, guys. I'm going to try and keep it under four. Okay? But if you're not on camera, you got to be quiet because you're going to look, it's an inherently weak position.
Yeah.
It's like all the cool kids, are sat down at the lunch table and it's like, hey, can I get in, please?
And think about, why did Trump get the most camera time in 2016?
Because he was the spiciest.
Exactly.
Hey,
it's good maybe, television. Maybe the other folks are pretty damn boring.
Yeah, maybe there's a method to what I'm doing here.
Yeah.
So I think Trump is an example of someone I'm no fan of Trump, but he is someone that really understands, really shines very brightly on a debate stage, particularly in those large debates where you have like 12 candidates, because he's so crazy. Like, you literally can't stop, right?
Well, everybody was talking about the letter to Turkish President Erdogan on Wednesday, I think it was, this week, that was like written by a seventh grader, if you're giving the seventh grader the benefit of the doubt.
Seriously, that's bad.
I mean, it was really bad, but guess what? Everybody was talking about it.
Oh, yeah.
That's what he wanted.
That's what he wanted.
He dictated the damn thing. Yeah, you know, like, somebody had to type it out, and they're like, are you serious? Like,
send it out. Send it out just like that. Send it out just like that.
And then you see what Erdogan did? He's like, I threw it in the trash.
No, it's so funny, and it's also too bad. But and then, like, we contrast that to Andrew Yang. Yeah. You know, this is a candidate who categorically refuses to say something negative about another candidate.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when you ask him, like, hey, what's your favorite part of campaigning? You know what he says? He's like, I've really enjoyed meeting the other candidates. They're very decent people. I'm like, God damn. And so it goes back to what I was saying last week. I was like, you don't have to. We're in an era in, thank goodness we're in an era in our society now where you don't have to participate in other people's forums. Mm-hmm. You can create your own. So right. What's he doing is he's creating his own forum. What he did is really, really cool. They're doing 2 hours. They did 2 hours Facebook Live. Then we're like, okay, we're going to stop here. Andrew needs a break. Then they're going to do 2 hours on Reddit, which is a text-based application.
Did he get a catheter for this whole thing?
No, he takes breaks. He takes breaks.
Okay.
And then they did 2 hours on Reddit.
That was the question in some of these debates, too. It's like,
yeah, seriously.
Dude,
seriously.
I couldn't. If I see a movie that's 2 hours, I mean, I can barely get through an hour-long podcast here.
You can barely do an hour here.
Exactly. I am not running for president because I have to pee.
I got to put you like on half a sippy cup.
I'm all like Forrest Gump. Gotta pee. Hey, dude, what are we going to talk about this week? Okay. Is there anything going on?
Uh-oh. Here we go. We've got the handy-dandy slides.
Hey, we've got topics. So, again, we're back for the YouTube viewers. We do have slides, and like we did on Monday with Chris McKaylee, we will post the slides up on the aroundthecapitol.com/podcast site so you can download them, use them how you'd like. Just please keep the logo on it.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead, here we go. The pod next week.
Yeah, we're going to be dark next week.
We're going to be dark next week. So unless maybe
can we cover this one right now?
Can we say there might be some nooner minutes?
There might be some nooner minutes. So, okay. I am not. So I'm a tech guy on the computer programming side. Y'all know that. I don't know crap about audio engineering, video engineering.
We have heard of various people in Midtown who tell us that Scott Lay is a digital expert.
Yeah. Right. But we compliment each other. We don't actually compliment with IEMENT. It's always EMENT. We never compliment each other. Like, I know, right? I never say, Jabron, you look good today, and vice versa.
Jerk.
Yeah, Scott, you're better on audio and not on video. But we do compliment each other because he is the tech guy on audio and video. But I may try some stuff next week by doing some nooner minutes. Well, Jabron is going to be, as I understand, you're going to be surfing with your beautiful wife, Haley, in Senate District 17, Senate District 19. You know, that's how we roll. Dude, we talk about districts, right?
Let me tell you about this trip we're going to take. Okay, we're going San Simeon.
Mm-hmm. SD17.
We're surfing and camping the beach the whole way down.
Oh.
So San Simeon, Pismo Beach. We're gonna rent the side by side, and pray for me on those sand dunes, and then we're gonna do Santa Barbara for 2 days.
Can you leave your keys to the studio? So you know if you don't come back,
I know, right? You know. Santa Barbara, and then 2 days at the Malibu Surf Rider
SD 19.
Yeah. Who is that? Hannah Beth?
That's Hannah Beth. Yeah. So you have Bill Monning's seat is SD 17, starting up in Santa Cruz, going down. I'm not sure exactly where it stops. I think just north of Santa Barbara County, and then it's Santa Barbara SD 19, which is Hannah Beth's district, which north of Malibu, Oxnard.
Okay, yeah,
so, Oxnard.
We're gonna do 2 days in Malibu.
Oh, okay.
If David Geffen lets us into the beach,
so that's SD 20. That's Henry Stern.
Henry Stern,
who lives in my neighborhood over in Southside Park.
You know, Henry and I used to staff the Senate floor together.
Wow. Yeah. Yes. Henry Stern is one of the legislators who is a former staff member.
He was
staff member for Senator Assemblywoman Brownlee, right?
That's correct.
She was never in the Senate. Yeah. She went to Congress.
No, he was a Senate staffer.
Right. So who? Oh, well.
Whoever the Senator.
Fran Pavley.
That's right.
God, no, the knowledge is just in this head that is absolutely useless except for chatting on microphones.
I would have to sit in the back of Senate and kind of report back to the leadership team when I was working for.
So you'd like wear a tie and everything.
I would wear a tie and everything.
Oh, God.
Yeah. But you know who sat next to me oftentimes was Henry Stern.
Huh.
And I had no idea. You know,
I don't think I've ever met Henry. We've emailed. It's like, dude, you're like, we're in the same neighborhood. So as soon as he's back up here after January 6th, reconvene.
He's a very cool guy.
We'll sit down. Cool guy.
Yeah, I enjoyed him.
Look forward to it.
Yeah, and then we're gonna do Malibu 2 days at the Surfrider Inn. We're gonna do the Getty Villa. If you've not been to the Getty or the Getty Villa, you cannot call yourself a Californian. Okay. Now they stole all the marble.
I'm an Oregonian, even though I've lived here since I was a year and a half.
Yeah. The best piece of art that they have is the building itself. The Getty. It's just an ode to modern architecture.
Oh, the Getty Museum.
But they have a villa in Malibu. Which is
it's separate from the museum.
It's Roman and Etruscan art. It's incredible. It's incredible. And then we're going to do a day in...
Gibran knows shit other than... Excuse me, there's my one. Gibran knows stuff other than jiu-jitsu and how to twirl a guy.
I was an art history minor.
Oh, wow. The stuff you learn.
Yeah.
Okay, he's going to teach me art.
And then we're going to be surfing by the boobs. We're going to be surfing in Orange County by the nuclear power plant.
Oh, yeah. Trestles. There was something today about...
The Coastal Commission just approved the dismantling.
Yeah.
Isn't that something?
Of the boobs. The Dolly Parton nuclear generation
station. Yeah, isn't that something they have to approve even that, too?
I used to camp down there growing up as a kid.
That's where we're going.
As a kid, I had no idea what might have been in the water, but, you know.
Yeah.
It was great camping.
And then we're doing a day in Torrey Pines Torrey Pines Inn, which is like fabulous, phenomenal. We should probably get to actual politics.
Tony's district.
Yeah. You know who I saw? Speaking of Tony, you know who I saw for the first time in a Facebook picture is Marty Block.
Ah. Oh. I love.
I was
Marty.
Like, man, I thought that guy just crawled under a hole and.
No, he's on
some sort of community state, college league or something.
No, he's not a community college league. He's on victims compensation. One of the big state commissions.
Oh yeah.
You know, state is a Senate appointee.
What I saw on Facebook was he was at a community college thing.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
they had something, but great guy. You know, we certainly miss him in the legislature, but. He's still serving his community and the state, so we're happy about that. So next week we might have some little bits, and they will be similar for those of you on the podcast feed to the book club podcast episode that Gibran dropped last week, which has been very popular, and I'm sure he thanks you and his guests thank you as well for your listens. So it'll be similar. It'll be in the same feed, but it'll be marked a little bit differently, and I'll put it up on the podcast page as well.
Yeah, and you know, I think this goes to speak where, like, Scott and I are buddies, but we do have separate interests. Like before this was Sacktown Talks by the Noon, it was just Sacktown Talks, and I was,
which is why the episode numbers seem to be a lot larger than the 40. Yeah. This is today's the 41st of our joint ones.
Yeah. But I would just have talks with people from town, including like David Garibaldi, the speed painter, and Lin Feifei, artists and stuff like that. So you might see some like Gibran talks and like some Nooner minutes and stuff like that. And you know, if you're into it, cool. If not, you know, maybe just skip it or whatever.
Pick and choose.
Hey, Cal Channel goes dark.
Oh, hey, you know what? So let's look at the Cal Channel website. Uh-oh. This is what happened to the Cal Channel website on, I believe it was Wednesday of this week.
Okay.
So the plug has been pulled.
I have it on good authority that you like have more information than you can share on air.
Yes.
So let me take you right up to the edge of the line, Scott. Yes. Let me take you right up to the edge of the line. Can you explain the
nobody hit the delete button on that website. That's the first and most important thing to know, that all of the archives.
Are we going to have a Cal Channel resurrection on spooky Halloween?
It's possible.
A spooky resurrection.
But all of the past content is going to the state archives in the Secretary of State's office. So the question is going to be how to deliver that content, whether it goes through the Assembly, through the Senate, whether there's some sort of channel that is revived, if you will. But let's jump back to what Cal Channel is.
What was wrong with how it was going to begin with? If we're immediately talking about reviving it, what was wrong with it to begin with?
It costs somewhere, the numbers have been fuzzy. It costs somewhere between $2.5 million to $4 million a year to run. It's paid for by a fee that everybody that gets cable will find on their billing statements. Mine is $1.40 a month, $18.60 a year, that I'm paying for the government channels, the Sacramento City Council, all the channels I can't find. I mean, I've got like 15 channels I watch of what, a couple hundred? I can speak into my remote and California Channel will come up. I do watch Sac City Council occasionally when they have some hot issue on. But we all pay for this content. Cal Channel was started in 1994, my first year in Sacramento, actually. And 1995, of course, was the year of the big speakership fight, where Willie Brown, after the 1994 election, held on to a functional majority of the assembly and passed the gavel through Brian Setensich and Doris Allen before Kurt Pringle finally got it, and only to lose it in 1996.
He did the unthinkable. He made a deal with the Republicans.
A couple of Republicans. Yeah. Well, first with Paul Horcher.
That would be so unspeakable today.
Well, it's not crazy. That's not true. What was the first thing that happened this year politically in Sacramento?
What?
Brian Manshine changed parties.
To become a Democrat. No, what I'm saying is, like, for a speaker to make a deal with a couple of Republicans nowadays to develop a functioning majority.
Brian Setensich and Paul Horcher both eventually changed their party registrations. So they just didn't do it with as much glamour and, you know, spotlight as Brian Manshine did in January of this year.
Yeah, he did find the spotlight for that, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it was highly covered, and you know, I think that.
But that's also because it fit a pre-existing narrative, and the media loves to do that.
Yeah,
there's nothing more powerful than confirmation bias, right? And I mean, it is true. Like, the death of the Republican Party in California is well documented, right? So
here's the changing voting behavior in Greater San Diego.
Yeah,
I mean, Northern San Diego is becoming more and more Dem. San Diego City, as you know well, since you did a lot of work down there, the city of San Diego is now safe Dem. I mean, functionally, the council's going to be Dem. The next mayor's going to be Dem. A majority of the Board of Supervisors is Dem. You know, Brian, I think he was somewhat candid that, you know, he was following his voters. Yeah. You know, people think that legislators get elected to lead their voters. No.
They get elected to follow their voters.
Yeah. And sometimes that can lead to a party change. And it's happened both directions over time.
But can we also say that this story very neatly fit a pre-existing narrative that the media was covering?
Oh, yeah.
And they were like, hey, let's just boom. It's almost like a Lego block, like a Tetris block. Like, this fits in perfectly to this broader narrative that we've been talking about for years now. There's some confirmation bias on the part of the media.
Well, that's like John Kasich coming out and calling for a Senate trial on impeachment today. You know, that fits into the narrative. John Kasich CNN mouthpiece now. He's not elected to anything. He won't be president. I like the guy. He ain't going to be president. But it just gives something for the media to talk about as opposed to 15, 18, however many damn Democratic presidential candidates there still are talking about how bad Trump is. Once Republicans start talking about it, you know, every word that Marco Rubio speaks over the next few weeks is going to be hyper scrutinized by the media.
Hey, since this is a little bit off topic.
Us going off topic. Well, I know, right? You know,
what are the chances he fails the trial in the Senate? I mean, God, how many people has he? How many Republican senators?
I honestly,
that picture of him having dinner with Mitt Romney.
Yeah,
that's the whole. For folks listening, you know, he like dangled an appointment in Mitt Romney's face. And
Secretary of State, not just an appointment. Secretary of State, the number one appointment.
Yeah, he said, "Hey, let's have dinner," and then he like trolled him and like had a big smiling Joker face, like while Mitt Romney was obviously being tortured.
Yeah,
but that's just how Trump operates, right? Yeah. That's just how he operates. How many moments like that? You know, do you tack on to all the Democrats, which are going to be in lockstep on this?
I think it's a 50% chance that if the House impeaches the president, and it looks like the Senate's going to trial, I think he steps down to protect the family business. And I've said that before. I think on this mic.
Well, he pardons himself or whatever and steps down.
Well, pardoning would only be if there was enough evidence for a crime. I don't think he pardons himself. I think constitutionally he probably can, but I think that people would just, like, even like the most ardent Democrats, like an AOC or an Ilhan Omar, they would just like to see him go.
I think some people.
New York City might prosecute him.
I can hear lock him up. I can hear lock him up from the activist circles in the Democratic Party.
The one criminal case that's actually going forward and the Supreme Court green-lighted release of tax returns to is the county district attorney or state's attorney, whatever they call it, in New York City, is investigating the hush money payments to porn stars and others during the campaign. If that prosecution goes forward, that's a state prosecution. A president cannot pardon somebody state prosecutions.
So his
troubles are probably more on the local level. And he has no control over it. And it's not like Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York, is going to pardon him.
Would it be too
after Trump's trashed Andrew's brother, you know, on who's a CNN host?
Would it be too crazy to imagine that he flees to Russia?
Well, he'll probably build some more stuff there.
Yeah.
Got to go pick up the gold. You know, I mean, no, it just gets stranger every day. I want to believe that everything's a conspiracy theory, but they just like put it out there.
Stranger Things? You ever watched Stranger Things?
No, I think you've mentioned that before.
Oh, dude, we're in the Upside Down. There's like this alternate universe where nothing makes sense, you know. But
or somebody did a I think it was Saturday Night Live had a skit on Stranger Things last weekend.
Phenomenal show.
That was tied into Halloween. Yeah.
You know what's interesting is like the. The arc of events that have been happening since 2016,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I really want people to appreciate this. Donald Trump is a fundamentally transformative figure in our American politics.
Yeah.
And the way that Newt Gingrich and Bill O'Reilly and that like clan of talking heads came and like forever coarsened our dialogue,
mm-hmm.
you know, the Trump effect is unfortunately going to be with us for a really, really long time. What like I think I read this like in Time or in CNN. They talked about like Russian misinformation, and they said like one of the things that like, the Russians do like with misinformation is not to necessarily like feed you a lie, but to bombard you with so many different theories and so many different ideas that the public gets this general idea that the truth is indiscernible.
Okay, you know? No, I agree with you. Now, dude, you've got to pull up the latest tweet by Donald
Scott
Trump.
Read a tweet, everybody.
You got to watch this little video that he's posted up. It's Republicans must stick together and fight. It's making fun of Mitt Romney.
Let me see here.
If you can pull up.
Donald
It J. should be his very first one. It's a pinned tweet, even though it's the latest tweet.
Okay, here we go. should we do the audio?
If we can.
Okay, here we go.
I don't know if there is audio. Oh, yeah. I wonder if he got permission to use this music, or is this going to be another takedown?
No, it won't be a takedown here. Give me a second here.
No, I mean, for the Trump, not for you.
Oh, no, the music is playing in the background from...
Oh, it's a different... Oh,
yeah.
Oh, that's okay, the continuation of our intro.
Let's go back to this here.
Okay.
This is Trump's tweet here.
Slippery.
Oh, man, he really is making fun of
Mitt Romney. Look at that. Magnificent hotel. So federal employees... made this, or maybe it was campaign,
no,
but that would be illegal. But that would also be illegal,
folks. You got to engage on the YouTube. This we got the whole video playing here.
I mean, this is just wild.
Wait here, let's let people listen to it. This is about Mitt Romney.
That's who's going to be voting.
Okay, it's good.
On the removal from office.
He's going to vote to impeach. He's going to vote.
Well, he'll
to
vote for removal from office. House does impeach. Yeah.
Don't give me that stuff.
It's important to understand the difference.
Don't give me that. Don't give me that.
Because the Democrats in the House can impeach all they want. It doesn't mean anything. Ask Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
Republicans in the House, you know.
You know, this impeachment thing is a disaster, man. Did you see the his fundraising totals in the days after the impeachment inquiry was launched?
Yeah.
It was like a record breaker.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a record breaker.
Oh, I mean, it's good for money, but you know, money can't buy me love. Somebody sang that once. Hey. Okay, should we get back to the podcast on California stuff?
Yeah. Okay. Here we go. Boom, Cal Channel. I was just trying to. I'm trying to get you to share more than you should on here. Okay, who have you been talking to?
Nobody.
Who have you been talking to?
Okay, so the history of Cal Channel. So the issue is that cable providers have been carrying Cal Channel and paying the entire amount, although the payment is a direct pass through from ratepayers or subscribers, AT&T and similar alternative media providers that got permission several years ago from the legislature to bundle telephone service with cable TV service. It's UVerse, I think, for AT&T.
Right.
And satellite, whereas Xfinity is Comcast. There's a bunch down in Southern California, Spectrum. So the cable companies are like, why are we still carrying this when our competitors don't have to? And that's fair, but then again, the competitors aren't charging the same fee that the cable providers have.
Yeah, it's like, hey, you get the fee. That's
right.
The deal.
Because that's tied into the concept of cable. A cable is a franchise. So cities give licenses to cable companies to dig up the street and everything. And obviously phone lines, traditional phone lines, same thing. They get a franchise agreement. But this fee was put in cable bills as part of that franchise.
It's $1.40.
$1.40, $18.60 a year. I mean, it's not, I mean, $18.60 a year.
It's
I mean,
not nothing.
That's a month of Netflix.
Yeah. I mean, I'd rather have the month of Netflix. Hey, who's doing more for civic education than you and I?
Yeah,
in town.
Where's our $18.60 a year per? I mean, we're up to like 600 viewers and listeners a week. I mean, that's a lot of money, yeah. You know, for 40 podcasts, hey. 41 after this one.
Folks, send us $18.
Yeah, $18.60. I want that 60 cents. What does it cost? Like you want your $1,000 a month from Yang. So as of right now, all of the content is going to the Secretary of State's office, but I do know that discussions are ongoing about how to continue to provide. Particularly for people like our parents who aren't necessarily surfing on the assembly website to find like committee hearings, that sort of thing, and who would stumble across Cal Channel like in the old days. I don't even know where Cal Channel is. I just talk it in my remote. I remember in Orange County, it was Channel 22.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I feel like the digital divide is bullshit. People can get online now. We've crossed that bridge. To me, why not put the California channel?
I have to fly my mom down here to have her sit here and talk to you.
You can teach your mom to pull up YouTube. All these
TVs. She doesn't touch her computer
these
anymore.
These TVs have YouTube on them.
I know.
This TV has YouTube on it. I know. The same remote. You could talk into the remote and say, Sacktown Talks by the Nooner. Episode number 77, most listened to. And it'll pull it right up. And there'll be our ugly mugs, you know. Look at this, man.
I think 81's the most listened to
for
now.
The folks on YouTube, right. Man. Dude, look at this. You see the entrance into my, anyways, into my. I'm balding really badly. That's why I'm always under a hat.
$18.60 per listener. We'll pay for some hair plugs. But
no, but seriously, why not put the Cal Channel on YouTube for like a tenth of the price? Drop the fee, and you could.
The cost is more in staffing and the least space that they've had in the Senator Hotel. They don't need that anymore.
They don't need that anymore.
Yeah.
You need a server farm? You need a server farm and a couple. Cheap. Yeah. You need a server farm and a couple Jabrons. Cal Channel, let's talk. I'm glad to do the contract for you. We'll put it on you put it on YouTube, okay? Yep. Now, but here's the real difference though. Here's the real difference between California Channel on a TV versus California Channel on a YouTube or on a podcast, okay? Is that on TV, it's like it's not a la carte. You get what you get. It's like you're tuning into the radio and whatever's playing, right? But if you put it on YouTube and you say, hey, you know what? I'm actually really interested in that public safety committee hearing that I didn't get to sit in on last week. So I was at another hearing. Pull that sucker up.
Right. Well, I went to the vaping hearing on Tuesday or Wednesday of this week on vaping, e-cigarettes. Fascinating hearing. But I had a haircut. You know, I had to go see Jason at Iverson's Barbershop on 10th Street. He did not pay for that plug, but he does a great job. So I had to leave the hearing early because I had a 3 o'clock hair appointment. And so on the assembly website, I can jump to that point. Whereas if it was, and you could on the website for Cal Channel, it was a little bit junkier than what the assembly has built because they built it, the assembly and the Senate, they had to build it after Prop 54 that requires all of the hearings and floor sessions to be online. And so it was just better technology from my perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, YouTube, I mean, there are a lot of alternatives out there. But what I miss the most is actually just the California history programs, that sort
Ken
of thing.
Kramer?
California Gold episodes, the episodes about the last remodel of the state capitol and the history of the state capitol. I mean, is anybody filming what's going on right now? Is, you know, I don't know what the big white condom over the capitol is right now. I'm told it's just cosmetic work, but it's in advance of the opening of the swing space.
Why doesn't
as the annex is rebuilt?
Why doesn't the state library develop like a partition in its website for like here's a policy history.
We got something to talk to the legislature. We'll talk to the budget committee about that next year.
The state library should do a partition in their website. Here's a policy history of California and just start archiving these hearings.
Boom, they do boom, have boom, boom, boom. The California Research Bureau, which is part of the state library. I found just last week, I think I linked to it. has a great new site on district profiles, mm-hmm. and it's all the legislative districts with demographic and like economic information. It's wonderful. It's something I've wanted to do but didn't have the underlying data for a long time. So people should check that out. I actually just saw when I was sitting outside of Chicory and running into people. I saw Greg Lucas, the state librarian. We should talk to him about it and see, because you know, see what's going to happen with the legislature next year. I think something will happen.
Isn't there
with
an
Cal
opportunity
Channel
here for the state library to take some to say? I feel like in the big policy pieces,
right?
Where it's like there's some of the, you know, like all the hearings that went on about SGMA,
yeah,
the sustainable groundwater stuff, right?
Right.
That's part of California history.
Right.
That is part of California history.
And so are,
whether you like it or not, you know. Right.
And California Channel also did things, and I've written about this. They would air the Open California / Capital Weekly conferences. So that organization, which disclosure I'm vice president of the board of, does 4 to 5 issue focused conferences each year. Now they're expensive because renting a hotel ballroom isn't cheap, and providing food and that sort of thing's not cheap.
And the AV is not cheap either.
AV is expensive.
Yeah.
And so, but Cal Channel would carry those programs for free. That was a great service. So people that, you know, somebody that's not in Sacramento, doesn't have travel money, or couldn't afford, let's say, $100, $150 for a conference.
Students.
Cal Channel would air it.
Like our guy Jeremiah.
And so we need to figure out how that kind of content continues to access. Be distributed. Exactly. So I don't care who. Yeah.
No, but if we're talking about access, there's fundamentally nothing more accessible and equitable than the internet. Right. Okay.
But Cal Channel's kind of, I mean, the cable companies, not Cal Channel, because the leadership of Cal Channel, while the cable companies fund it, the leadership is separate. So the cable company's decision to pull the plug on Cal Channel, though, will not be forgotten.
So do they just pocket the money?
That's the question the legislature failed to ask before they adjourned. They knew damn well that mid-October the plug was being pulled after they were gone for the year. And they could have.
Which committee would conduct the oversight hearing?
I think it would be a joint committee arts? Hearing of rules. No, oh. Not really arts. It would be a rules because it's about the operation of the legislature.
Got it. I mean, this what a perfect so opportunity for
Ken Cooley and Tony Atkins are the two rules chairs.
But seriously, what happened to the money?
That's a question. It's
$1.40 times every cable bill,
right? So that would be
cable bill in the state of California.
That would be the telecommunications. What is commerce
and conveyance?
Communications conveyance.
Yeah.
So those committees would look at the charges, you know, and the Public Utilities Commission. Okay. I think also regulates it.
What'd you do with the money?
Right.
What'd you do with the money?
I mean, you didn't double the coverage of the Sacramento City Council, or at least we hope you didn't. I mean, 90% of the time on some of these
into the mic.
Right, I mean,
all the crazies.
That's the strange thing is a lot of these government channels are dead air for like 22 hours out of the day.
That's why it makes no sense.
But I mean, they easily could.
But seriously, that's why it makes no sense for it to be on TV. It has to be on YouTube or the internet or your own native play or whatever you're gonna make it. But that's exactly you just articulated the case for it. Okay, right.
Which is also the reason that cable companies need to be watching out of doing something stupid, because guess what? You know, we're pulling further and further away from cable. You know, a la carte web based things like HBO Go,
Hulu.
You know, Hulu. Netflix. A la carte,
dude. I mean, what I'm watching The Expanse on Amazon Prime. Prime is in the content game now.
Oh, yeah. Great content.
It's incredible. Have you watched The Expanse?
No.
Oh, my goodness.
Was that movie earlier this year that was the it was kind of a suspense one. It wasn't Gone Girl, but it was a similar one, but it was an original movie for Amazon Prime.
Oh, I mean,
some great content.
There's a bunch of stuff on Amazon that I'm looking to watch.
I mean, Netflix, the original content. Well, I mean, that's why they're taking over, like the Emmys.
I think, Amazon spends something
and the Oscars.
Amazon spends something like $1 billion a year.
And now Apple's moving into that too.
Yeah.
Apple has its own original content, and they've got a lot of great stars and directors working on content.
Yeah. Hey, shout out to Handmaidens. I think the most beautifully shot show.
Yeah, I need to check that one out. That's got Bradley Whitford in it, right? Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah. Dude, you could just watch that show with the sound off.
Yeah.
And just appreciate it for how beautifully it's shot. And then the color rendering that they did on it. you can't get the colors to pop that vividly, like without special lighting. But they also did some rendering digitally. It's just
how
incredibly beautiful.
How totally off topic. How versatile is Bradley Whitford? It was like Josh Lyman for The West Wing.
Yeah,
he was like the bad guy in Get Out, the Jordan Peele movie.
Yeah,
like the evil father, racist father. Handmaid's Tale. Now he's got Perfect Harmony out, where it's like it's a sitcom.
He's a phenomenal actor. Hey, so I'm gonna make this this plug one more time. Okay,
$1,860 a year.
No,
rather just PO Box.
Let me ask you this. Is there some unseen politics here?
I don't think so, honestly.
Really?
I mean, I think that they announced that they were pulling the plug on Cal Channel to see if the legislature would send a check. The legislature didn't. The plug is pulled. Legislature's gone. So people are just missing informational hearings, like the vaping e-cigarette one on Wednesday. But you know, as we come back toward January, you know, we'll see what the next steps are. And I literally have no clue. I've talked to various people. There is an interest in getting something done, but what that something is, who pays for it, and how it's done is totally unclear.
Yeah. Okay.
Hey, let's move on to a fascinating, from a legal standpoint, political standpoint.
Hey, you had some critical words for Javier Becerra today in the Nooner.
Yeah. So
okay, here we go.
Okay, we're talking about initiatives, ballot measures that have been signatures have been circulated either to amend statute, the California Constitution, or both. Generally speaking, titles for ballot measures that are put on the ballot by the legislature are actually written into the statute itself. So we're really talking about initiatives. So the example we have is the Attorney General's title and summary. Actually, we're just talking titles because summaries are too long. Related to the proposed education and local services tax for K-12 community colleges and local governments, known as the split roll. So under Proposition 13, passed in 1978, the property tax protection measure that was sold as protecting homes of largely elderly people from the inflation, caps valuation increase of 2% a year, caps overall taxation at 1% unless approved locally, like a school bond. So the issue is the 2% valuation.
Even the local approvals, there's a cap on the local approvals too, though, right? It can't be more than 2% total.
Right, but then like under Prop 39 bonds for schools and community colleges, that can be additive to that total 1%. So it has to be Constitution.
It can be over 1%, because my previous house, where it was like the true tax rate was like 1.25 or something like that, when you added all the other stuff.
Well, there's a difference between ad valorem, which is percent based on the value, and like a parcel tax, which is a fixed rate. That's not a Prop 13 issue. It's like, okay, you own a parcel, your house could be $1 million, could be $100,000, you're paying $12
for the library.
Exactly. Yeah. So, under Article 2, Section 7D of the California Constitution, for those listening, you can find this in the slides. Those watching can see it on the slide. It gives responsibility of crafting titles and summaries for potential ballot measures to the Attorney General's office. So Gibran comes up with a brilliant idea of free jujitsu for all Californians with...
that's silly, but how about this? All cops should be purple belts, because if you don't know how to defend yourself in a hand-to-hand situation, you're more likely to pull out the gun.
Exactly. And he's going to put a quarter-cent sales tax on the ballot to pay for it. Okay, it's simple. So he walks in, he comes up with the language, and he goes over to the Attorney General's office, he writes a check, and the Attorney General's office then goes ahead and assigns a title and summary. They have about 30 days to do it, and there's a public viewing period. Well, the example we have came out yesterday, which is related to the split roll. So this changing how property tax valuation is assessed.
Can I stop you here for a second? Just to give folks for a lot of people, the only thing they're going to read, the only research they're going to do, is what it says on that ballot.
Right.
That's probably more voters than not.
Which is generally the title.
Which is, yeah. So
the summary you basically find in the voter pamphlet, which is even, like a yellow pages.
This is all the research. Yeah. Like 80% of people's are going to do. So there. I mean,
it's very significant.
This isn't. Yeah. I mean, a lot of times we get in the weeds and stuff, but this isn't nothing. I mean, this is incredible.
It's big time politics.
This is incredible power over one of the premier proposals going on the presidential ballot. Right.
Yep.
I mean, this is. And for it to go to a political actor,
for it
to go to a political actor, this, how many people, does he get lobbied on this?
Generally not. And I've actually been a proponent of a ballot measure for community colleges, and
they don't take meetings. They don't take meetings.
Generally, nothing official. And I didn't have none of our folks, including our lawyers. Nobody actually was working with the AG's office. I can't promise that. Whispers didn't happen, particularly with huge proponents of this ballot measure for 2020. I can't say that nothing happened. It's certainly possible. So last year, 2018, was a state election. So the state officers, obviously Gavin Newsom was on the ballot, as was Attorney General Javier Becerra, who was appointed in 2017 by Jerry Brown to fill Kamala Harris's role as Attorney General. So they were all on the ballot last year. A split roll ballot measure, which those of you who are watching online can see the title for last year, it had the tax provisions first. And then the proceeds of the taxes were identified second. So I'll just read it really quickly. So this is 2018. The title requires certain commercial and industrial real property to be taxed based on fair market value, period. Dedicates portion of any increased revenue to education and local services, initiative constitutional amendment. Straightforward. You have a tax, and then you say what the tax is going to pay for. So in Gibran's example, all cops should have purple belts. I'm sorry. Yeah. You say, yeah, yeah. No. In the 2018, it would be, we are going to raise taxes by a quarter cent, sales taxes by a quarter cent. And with that, we're going to require all cops to have purple belts. And that's how we pay for it, the training.
Right.
So it's the tax first and then the purpose for the tax.
Right.
I just yanked my headphones out of the plug. So that's why they're hanging around my neck.
That's okay.
So that measure has been pulled back by its proponents. It's technically still qualified for the ballot in November 2020, but they wanted to change the language up a little bit. And frankly, they weren't going to do it in time for 2018 anyway. And most people think that Governor Gavin Newsom, who had generally supported the concept in the past, and Attorney General Javier Becerra didn't want it on the same ballot as they were on. So we're now looking at November 2020. Basically, there have been some technical tweaks to the language that was set forth in 2018. And look at the ballot title we have now. Gibran, do you have it pulled up right there? Yeah. You want to read it?
Here we go.
So 2020, the title is?
This is crazy. Increases funding for public schools, community colleges, and local government services by changing tax assessment of commercial and industrial property, initiative constitutional amendment. It's just this little piece that fell on you. It's just that piece in there.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, for folks listening.
Well, you didn't finish it.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did. That's 2020.
Did you read the tax assessment part?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear that.
Yeah.
Maybe because I broke my headphones.
2020 increases funding for public schools, community colleges, and local government services by changing tax assessment of commercial and industrial property.
Okay.
I mean, that's at the end, though. It's at the end.
Right.
It's kind of hidden at the end.
So there. 2018 was tax first, what's funded from the tax after.
Oh, here. I'll read 2018.
I already read 2018.
Okay.
So it's vice versa.
Yeah.
That's the issue here. Instead of saying we're going to we're going to benefit
first.
Right. So in Gibran's example, I write 2018 saying we're going to raise sales taxes by a quarter cent. And with that quarter cent, we're going to fund training of all cops to have purple belts in jiu-jitsu. Now in 2020, in that example.
Hey, that's a legitimate proposal.
I know. Well, in 2020, so I'm going to make it a bit more saleable using this, using, you know, a parallel to split roll. In the 2020 context, it would be, we're going to provide police officers, we're going to provide training to all police officers to become jujitsu purple belts, period. We're going to pay for that with a 1/4 cent sales tax, period.
Right.
Very different.
Very different. I mean, anything sounds better if you get the benefit first.
Right.
Anything sounds
better. And look at the language. It was in 2018.
Are they supposed to have guidelines for how they write this?
It is under the scrutiny of courts, and there's a great deal of...
No, but haven't the courts issued some guidance on
right,
this
there's
over
a,
time?
There's a extensive ministerial... I look up how to spell that damn word today. Immense ministerial discretion given to the Attorney General's office.
No, but this
only
is,
things that are intentionally... are facially, factually wrong or deceptive.
Prejudicial or whatever.
Right. I don't see that in this situation where the only change of what had already been approved is the ordering. It's no real change. Indeed, 2020, one could argue, well, they're selling it better by saying, instead of saying education and local services, they're saying public schools, community colleges, and local government services. But my legal argument is, well, that's actually being more accurate, more expansive to the voters to understand.
You know, I feel like the bottom line on this is there is some funny business here. How is it that it can be totally inverted from just 2 years ago?
I agree.
How is it that it can be totally fucking
state inverted? Officers aren't going to be on the ballot in 2020. Yeah. It's a presidential.
I mean, that a complete inversion of the structure of the language. I think some people in the past have proposed that there should be like a panel of folks who should like approve this type of language. Mm-hmm. But you know, I'm the type of person that's like really reluctant to like create yet another like state board or commission.
The example,
but, I mean, this is, and for folks listening, vote no. We're taxed to death. This is crazy. This is the camel's nose under the tent.
I just got
my
community colleges need money.
We just got our property tax in the mail.
Wow.
We just got our property tax.
Yeah, I'm sure it's expensive.
They want $7,000.
Why don't you pay for it? I don't know what my taxes were. When my property taxes in Davis, I didn't know because it was all just built into that mortgage account.
Escrow account.
Money just disappeared, you know?
This is good. We have the house paid off.
Yeah, but still, so you have to pay the taxes.
No, but this is crazy. We have the house paid off between the fucking HOAs.
Yeah.
Between the HOAs and the goddamn $7,000 a year.
They didn't even clean up the homeless trash in front of your door.
It's insane. The HOA and parking is like $600 a month. And then the property taxes is like another $600 a month. You know, it's okay. We can bear it. Okay. But this is the camel's nose under the tent. As soon as the spending lobby gets split roll done, they're going to eye Prop 13 for residential. They're going to be like, oh, look at that. Prop 13 for residential sure looks scrumptious, doesn't it?
I believe that absolutely would not happen.
It absolutely would not happen because we're battening off the spending lobby at every turn of... It's like the invaders or the hordes are at the gates of town. You know what I mean? This is the camel's nose under the tent. Okay, would I like more funding for schools? Yes. But as soon as they do this... they're gonna be like, oh, residential Prop 13 sure looks
no
nice.
No way, that's not gonna happen. But let's just,
it's not gonna happen because this isn't gonna happen.
Okay, so first, this is not a done deal as the education proposal.
Did we explain what split roll is? Did we even explain that?
We've done it on previous podcasts. Under Prop 13, residential, commercial, and industrial property is all treated the same with the annual increase in valuation capped at 2%. And that's been consistent since 1978. There's an argument that corporations that own commercial industrial property can change ownership by changing portions of ownership. So you stage it out over several years where 30% changes 1 year, 30% changes another year, 40% changes another year.
You never have
a 50% turnover where that doesn't really happen with residential. Now, it's important to point out that there is a carve out. It's not all commercial property that would be covered in the split roll proposals. Residential commercial property. I mean, technically, you live in commercial property,
right?
But that's a carve out. So that would not apply to a commercial building that is, that it has a residential component. The hotel would be separate from the residential units.
This 1% thing is super important. I think we're starting to see. Kind of some threads of it in Silicon Valley and places like San Jose. Okay, I also had a beautiful
1% or 2%. Are you talking about the 1% cap on the tax rate?
Yeah, just
as opposed to the valuation, because this is only valuation.
Yeah, just I'm just in defense of Prop 13 generally.
Okay.
I was at this beautiful
wedding. It just gets really confusing once you start mixing the one and two and people get all confused.
Well, let me, well, hear me out generally.
Okay.
I was at this beautiful wedding last weekend. Okay. Oh. I'm at the, it was actually, it was cool. They did the ceremony on their own. And they just had
did you get to sit on the floor in cross-legged like I did, fearing that your pants are going to split?
No, that was those were cool pictures.
They were cool.
But I was talking to this guy. He was a plumber steam fitter, and that's the cool thing about weddings is that like they kind of bring people in together from all sorts of different walks of life.
The capital people all somehow grouped together.
It is an incestuous
dress alike.
It's an incestuous community. It is an incestuous community. That's part of its downfall. But I was like, "Hey, what do you do?" He's a nice guy. He was like, "Oh, I'm a steam fitter in San Jose." I was like, "Hey, is it crazy out there?" And he's like, "Man, you wouldn't believe, dude." And I was like, "If you don't mind me asking, how do you get by?" And he's like, "Oh, my dad paid off the house like 30 years ago," and he's like, "Now the whole family's there, the whole family." You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But if it wasn't for that cap on the valuation, mm-hmm. the way that the property value has skyrocketed over the years, the family would be priced out of not even the payment, but the property taxes on this heirloom of a house that they've inherited over generations.
Right.
Okay. So
that's why residential will never be touched.
No, residential will be touched. As soon as you guys get your way on this.
I'm not a backer of the split roll tax.
You were calling yourself a backer of the spending lobby. You said
I said I was a member. I was paid to be a member of the spending lobby. There's a very different, big different thing than saying I vote my conscience every election.
You also just said vote yes.
I vote yes for community colleges.
Well, of course.
Because that's important, because what I was trying to say was, this split role proposal is not a done deal because the California School Boards Association, Association of California School Administrators, and the Community College League of California have an alternative that taxes high income individuals and corporate profits. We don't have a fiscal analysis yet on it, so I'm not doing any analysis until the LAO does its official fiscal analysis. But even within the education labor community, they're not sure which side they're going to get behind. Now, Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook, Zuck's got his own problems right now over the,
I listened to that speech.
Elizabeth Warren's all.
I listened to that
speech. The one at Georgetown yesterday?
Yeah. That was a fantastic
good speech.
He said, hey, we're not going to police. He said, you don't want a tech company telling you what you can and can't say. Yeah. You know what's really, and then all the social justice warriors are like, no, you have to police racism, blah, 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 blah. You know what's
crazy? But it's only for political candidates.
In general, they shouldn't.
Which is a whole different standard for free speech generally.
They shouldn't be policing
speech. They should be a neutral provider.
You know what's so crazy? How life repeats itself. Okay, back in the early 2000s, it was like the evangelical Christian lobby telling you what you can and can't say. Mm-hmm. I didn't like it then. I don't like it now. Now it's the SJW woke lobby telling you what you can and can't say. They switch sides. The parties and the left.
SJW
social justice weenies, social justice warriors.
Okay,
social justice. You never heard SJW?
No. We speak different language.
Social justice warrior.
By the way, tell people when you do show notes and you put an X, what does that mean?
It just means versus. It just means.
My generation didn't get that lesson.
No, it's a fight thing. It just means like at the intersection.
You're crossing. Yeah,
I just means at the intersection of the two. They used to.
Figured it out.
On posters.
I'm sure if I had the question,
other folks. They used to put it on fight posters. But seriously, these two different sides, they're switching. They're switching platforms. It used to be the evangelical right that would tell you what you can't say. Now it's the control left. Now it's the social justice left. I didn't like it in either way. So Zuckerberg was just saying, hey, we're not going to police speech. We're a platform. That's it.
Go. Well, it's
con Dios.
There's actually a legal issue there because once you get into it,
he's so right.
Because
if
you start doing it, then you have to treat everybody equally or you lose the protections you have under federal law. So it's also Congress, and I've said this, it's like, Elizabeth Warren or Kamala Harris or Cory Booker or Klobuchar, you're in the United States Senate. You have a problem with what Facebook is doing, then pass a damn law. That you can do it. Mm-hmm. I'll oppose it, but you can do it. Don't sit there and just talk about it at CNN town hall meetings.
You know what's funny? That's part of why you can't get custom license plates in California. Same standard.
You can still, but there's a scrutiny standard.
The content is really neutral.
If it can be interpreted to be obscene, and they have people that are trained to find anything that might be obscene that sometimes is ridiculous.
So I looked into this for Tony a little bit, but it's kind of the same. Yeah. It's kind of like the same thing.
Yeah.
They created a threshold for the custom license plates that is so onerous that basically no one can get through it, because one of those fake abortion counseling groups that they were like, yeah, religious fundamentalists that would like convince you into having the baby,
right?
They wanted to get their own license plate.
Pregnancy counseling.
Yeah, they wanted to get their own license plates, and they went with the argument of like, hey, if you're gonna,
Not the license plate number, not the personalized license plate, but the themed license plate for the benefit of a charity.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah,
because those are two different issues.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, the themed license plates. So the pregnancy counseling centers wanted their themed license plate,
right? And like the Lake Tahoe ones.
Exactly, right. And then California, they're like, well, we're not going to allow this, are we? Yeah. So they're like, okay, here's the deal. You have to get, I think it was something like 7,500 pre-signups, and it essentially doubles your registration costs.
Yeah.
So you have to get 7,500 people to pre-sign up for it, and it's incredibly difficult to do. I think the breast cancer people tried to do it, and they couldn't do it. The Boy Scouts tried to do it, and they couldn't do it.
I've been involved with a lot of charities. I've been involved with community colleges. We need to have a community college license plate. So I've looked into that issue.
It's so difficult, right?
And it's, Lake Tahoe. I mean, some of these state treasures that are treasures.
Yeah.
Makes sense, but it shouldn't be a revenue source, an easy charitable contribution
the firefighters thing. Yeah, but it goes back to what you're saying. Right. It's like you have to treat all species equally.
Right.
You have to have a test and then treat it all equally. I think Zuckerberg is right on the mark.
I don't disagree, and I called the Democrats out on this.
But man, he's a weird guy, though, isn't he? Just like his physical appearance and like the way he carries himself.
Oh, he's autistic. I mean, he acknowledged. I mean, he's autistic. Yeah.
Oh fuck, dude. I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry. Yeah. Guys and gals, I'm sorry. I use this product every day. I'm a fan.
Autism expresses it. No, I mean, autism's, he's on the autism.
I didn't know that. I didn't mean to put him down.
No, no. He's on the autism spectrum, which can be from debilitating to genius.
He's on the genius side.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And a lot of people in the programming industry are.
Yeah.
I don't want to say that I wish I was autistic, but I wish I had anything close to Zuck's smarts.
You have their social graces. Here, should we get into
Irwin.
Just kidding. Hey, should we get into the presidential stuff? You made a beautiful slide on this.
Yeah, so we're gonna get the presidential, but the question I want to pose for you. So the Legislative Council in 1997 was asked by John Burton to draft bills and write summaries for orphan asylums and to criminalize being poor. And the Ledge Council did their ministerial function of drafting those bills. Bills were never heard, but it was Burton's, Burton had just gotten to the Senate, and it was his way of just tweaking Pete Wilson after Pete Wilson went all the way to the right with Prop 187, anti-affirmative action, welfare cuts, those sorts of things in the lead up to the 1996 presidential campaign. We know how that worked out for Governor Wilson.
Right.
So they did the job there. Why aren't they the ones that do title and summary? They've got subject matter lawyers across the board.
Yeah.
Some people say legislative analysts. I think Ledge Counsel is actually better because they've got the subject matter lawyers as opposed to subject matter experts LAO.
LAO is more geared towards fiscal impacts.
That was was? That's a Prop 140 function. So LAO used to actually weigh in all committee hearings.
Yeah.
As the independent voice and analyst of the legislature, but Prop 40, when it capped expenditures of the legislature, it included LAO. And so in that cutback, which the legislature had lots of cutbacks within members' offices, but LAO cut way back, and that's when they got the fiscal focus. They've changed somewhat more recently, in recent years, to include more strictly policy issues, but that's so when the change happened. Prop 140 in 1990, that was term limits also.
Yeah, I'm really reluctant to, I love Ledge Counsel doing it, but I feel like, someone who's not like subject to political forces as much, right?
I mean, nobody ever claims Ledge Counsel is. I mean, they legally, they're the client of the legislature. They draft some crazy ass shit. But that's my shit.
No, but also, when do you see a Ledge Counsel deputy at a political event? Never.
No.
When do you see a Ledge Counsel deputy running for office? Never. I think never.
Right.
Diane Vollier-Bein is not, she's a stellar reputation. She's a player in her little world, but it's a non-political world.
So is Diane Boyer-Vine.
Yeah, whatever, dude. but she's not a political player. So I love that idea. I think here's another thing. How about this? Ledge Counsel could issue some, they could just issue some legalese guidelines where it's like, maybe get a linguist involved and be like, hey, you're always going to put the benefit last. You're going to put the tax first and the benefit
revenue
last.
Revenue first,
yeah. and then benefit last. I mean, you could issue some simple guidelines,
yeah.
And then just pass a resolution or pass a law saying like, hey, you should adhere to this, right? If we were really good government people and we were actually interested in doing that, it would take very little time for us to do that. But I think the legislature is comfortable having these different little avenues and these different little.
They know that the attorney. We're not going to have a Dan Lundgren as Attorney General again anytime soon.
We're not going to have an accountability person.
The Democrats are going to have the Attorney General's office, and the ballot measures will be crafted in a way so
to our liking.
The gas tax.
There really should be some sort of neutral.
So Prop 6,
which is why it'll never
Carl
happen.
DeMaio, who just retweeted me and retweeted my item, Carl, my tweet on this issue.
Carl, come on the show. You'll never win one of these elections. You might as well come on.
So he's got a good chance at CA50, the Duncan Hunter seat. But he tweeted about the fact that the Prop 6 proponents actually. The Prop 6 opponents went to court to try to get gas tax repeal in the ballot title. They didn't get that in. So courts are reluctant to do much in the area of interfering with the ministerial function of the Attorney General's office. But should something like this be a ministerial function, or is it inherently political when it's under a statewide political officer? I think we have evidence clearly that it is.
How about it's inherently political if it's about an election?
Well, Secretary of State's office does a lot of stuff that is totally non-political. I mean, I get every release and I go through it. I mean, there are few things.
They do a lot of like notarized stuff. Like, yeah, no, but like anything that anything that's about a ballot measure is political, in my view.
Except, I mean, they do the Secretary of State's office does ministerial stuff on signatures, those sorts of things, ballot measure status.
Hey, let's move on. You made this beautiful
presidential. Clear.
California Democratic presidential nomination. So we have an average year of California 120 PPIC.
We're not sure how the video. We're like,
it'll be fine.
Okay, it looks like it's going to be fine. So we've talked about this before, but we're going to dive into age and gender breakdown. So first, we have to start out with where folks are. This is the last three polls. So those of you that are seeing this on the slide, whether you're watching it on YouTube or whether you've opened the slides up on aroundthecapitol.com/podcast, I have four numbers here. We have three polls conducted from beginning of September through mid-October. California 120 is data garnered by Political Data Inc. for Capital Weekly. PPIC, Public Policy Institute of California, a very respected statewide poll. These are all likely voter numbers. And Berkeley Institute of Governmental Studies, which was done for the Los Angeles Times. And then I've averaged these numbers. There's no weighting in the averages, which I do sometimes when they're over a longer time period. And I may as we get additional polls coming forward. But simply put, Elizabeth Warren in first in California, Joe Biden in second, and Bernie Sanders in third. Kamala Harris, the favorite daughter of California, is in fourth at 8% consistently. Some people said there was an aberration, and first it was that Berkeley IGS was off. They were understanding her support. Then it was PPIC was also off. Then CA120, Capital Weekly. Like
all these have come in.
They all are at 8%. So averaging that was like really easy. Yeah. So when you look at some of these averages, it'll be like 0, 1, 1, or no bar, 1, and the average comes out to 0. Right. That's because it's less than 0.5%.
That makes sense.
So it's pretty consistent. The only thing we would note on this slide is that Bernie Sanders did lose some support after his heart attack, which and stents that were put in, even though he's back on the trail.
He's too old, man. Give it up.
He's 70. Eight, right? I think he's 78 or be 78 next year.
He wants to be 85 in office.
I mean, it's, you know.
He should be tested again for his ability to drive.
Well, we're going to come back to this one. That's a good point. But we're going to come back to this when we talk about age, because we have a very interesting phenomenon when we look at age and who the candidates are drawing from in terms of support. It's an inversion. So here's your average. I threw in Pete Buttigieg, who's at 6%, and Andrew Yang for Gibran's benefit, who's averaging at 3%. So he had 2-3% polls in CA120, PPIC. Berkeley IGS came in at 2, but it averages up to 3. So
you know, I think
he's relevant.
Fundamentally, I feel like the problem for Yang in California is that the Dems here are command and control Dems. You know, they believe like in an administered in a robust administered state. They hate the idea.
He's more self-reliant.
He's self-reliant. Yeah. He's like, here's $1,000. That's fair. It's not socialism. It's capitalism that doesn't start at zero. Where it's like, to the people here, especially in Sacramento, it's like, what? You're gonna dismantle these programs and just give people the money directly? Mm-hmm. That, I mean, it's anathema to them, you know? So I think like—
Okay, so when you run into a homeless person on the street, do you give them cash or do you buy a sandwich for them?
I don't give them anything.
Okay, so you don't believe in either Yang's proposal or—
Oh, no, no.
Or Elizabeth Warren's proposals.
No, I don't believe in giving directly, but I think that's a core component.
No, but that's an exact parallel.
No, no, I don't give directly. One, dude, my elbows hurt, man. They say in Spanish, codo.
No, but I mean, Yang is basically saying, hey, I trust the person asking for money outside of Chicory. I just saw a staffer we were just talking about. We don't want to name him but he took a guy in and bought him a Coke and a cookie or something.
He says,
I don't give cash.
I categorically do not give to homeless people because I don't want them coming anywhere near where I'm walking. I categorically.
Well, you don't work outside of Chicory.
No, I just categorically don't. I don't want them to think that there's going to be more money there in the future. However, as a policy, do I support giving everyone $1,000 a month and be like, hey, it does a number of positive things. One, you can't credibly stand on the corner asking for money. I know you're getting that $1,000. Now, you might make a bad decision this month, and you might be a public charge for the rest of the month. Okay, fine. And I do believe in taking care of, in like marshaling our resources and taking care of them together. But do I think that my $1 makes a difference? No. But just let me get through this, okay? No. You can no longer credibly ask for money on the corner. We all know that you're getting that $1,000. Two, okay? There is like a loss of a stigma attached to the money where it's like, you're getting it, I'm getting it, he's getting it too. Hey, guess what? We're all Americans. I don't look down on you for getting it. It's not need-based. You don't get it because you're down on your luck. You get it because you're an American. Okay. So I really believe in the power of that. You know, are some people going to make bad choices? Yeah, probably no greater percentage than people making bad choices currently. So
but what he's not doing though, I mean, just to continue on your example, he's not saying we're going to cut back on any of the existing programs. This is all additive.
He's saying you can choose.
Choose social programs over the $1,000 a month. That's not what I've read.
Yeah. That's
okay. We're going to come back.
I'll send you the link. Okay. But he's saying like, hey, you're getting a housing.
So no more federal housing subsidies for veterans.
You,
one of the current issues that being talked about right now. Yeah, Gavin Newsom's asked for it.
He's saying, hey, do you want, like, if your federal housing subsidy is something like $3,000 a month?
So if you're a veteran in San Francisco, why are you getting the same amount as a veteran in Victorville?
It's the same. The power of universality is incredibly beneficial.
It goes $1,000 goes for a hell of a lot further in Victorville than it does, or in Susanville than it does in San Francisco or Los Gatos.
Yeah. Well, if you start administering the program like the way that a government weenie would, you start fucking it up. So it's $1,000 to everybody. Okay. Now, if your housing subsidy is $3,000. Okay, you can choose to forego $1,000 to get $1,000 in cash.
No, you can't wave. You're on camera, dude. I'm not on camera. I can wave.
Hey, we'll be done in like literally 1 minute.
1 minute means like 20, but yeah. You know.
So if your housing subsidy would
be, no more bad language, dude.
Yeah, I know, right? If your housing subsidy would be $3,000, you can choose to forego $1,000 of it to get $1,000 in cash.
Okay.
So
I'm going to look into this, and after your vacation, I'm going to come back. We're going to have a discussion. Folks, just so you know, there is no bromance between Gibran and I. We fundamentally disagree on some things, and that's good, actually. Okay, so we talked about the top line number. Let's jump down to by age group.
Here we go.
Oh, and I don't know why it says you at the top. Basically, it should say California Democratic presidential nomination candidates over 5%. By age group. So this can be a misleading chart if you look at it wrong. What's important first is to look at total support in the right-hand side of the slide. Those are the same numbers that we saw on the previous slide. So it doesn't mean that, for Joe Biden to have 25% of 65-plus-year-olds does not mean he has more support from seniors than Pete Buttigieg, even though Buttigieg's 33% is higher.
Of his support.
Right. So Buttigieg, it's 33% of his 6% statewide support. Kamala, it's 18% of seniors, of her 15% of her 8% of support. Looks like the total support also creeped up a little bit. Y'all get the point. It mirrors what was on the previous slide.
Hey, so but what's the big takeaway here is that the youngest voters favored the oldest guy.
And vice versa.
And vice versa. So, you know, it's interesting. It's like Bernie's been hammering away on these issues forever.
Yeah.
You know? And so, like, if you look at the under 30 crowd, socialism isn't a bad word.
Right.
They're like, hey, like, inflation in housing, education, and medical has gone to the moon, and I've got nothing back for it.
What's the other thing
we
know
about socialize these costs?
What is the other thing we know about young people? They think they're invincible. They don't look at the age the same way as, frankly,
older
Bernie
people.
Sanders.
That's true.
Bernie Sanders' peers, they wake up in the morning, their back hurts. I mean, I talked to my mom. My mom is, she's younger than Bernie, but yeah. You know, my I have a 99-year-old grandmother, but my mom's in her mid-70s. And she would say, you know what? Somebody my age shouldn't be running for president.
Yeah. One of the many jobs I didn't get in politics was with Phil Garrizzo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I was going to do some consulting work for him. And he was like, nah, you know what? Maybe not. But we had Phil, you should come on the show sometime. You're a good guy. But we had a nice breakfast. And he was like, you know, I'm doing just okay. He showed up in a Hawaiian shirt. he was like, you know, I'm just okay. My best, you know, one of my friends just died. And he looks like he's like, you know, I suppose at this age, I'm just mourning my own mortality. Mm. It's so true, right? It's so true. So, you know,
it's something we've seen before, but not this dramatic. I mean, we haven't had a serious presidential candidate that's as young as as old as Bernie. And so the data are just fascinating to me.
Yeah.
From a political science perspective.
Elizabeth Warren and Joe, to me, Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders should have like a serious discussion and be like, hey, one of us should get out of this race and consolidate the social Democrat vote. That would be the end of the primary. That'd be the end of the primary.
But even though the policies are not much different, there's a lot of animosity between those supporters.
Dude, the Bernie bros?
Yeah.
The Bernie bros go hard in the paint, man. It's Bernie or bust. It's like, why? Like, what? Qualitatively, can you tell? Like, I can't tell you a single difference. For me, the difference between Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren is Elizabeth Warren is a pathological liar. Mm-hmm. She has serious veracity issues, you know? But on a policy basis, man.
Bernie's your taxes are going to go up. I'm going to give you a bigger, you know, a nicer model of car, and it's going to cost more.
Well, you say, hey, your taxes are going to go up, but your healthcare prices will go down. Right. Overall, you'll win. Here's a very honest answer. Where like Elizabeth Warren categorically refuses to give you like a straight answer on the issue, right?
Yeah.
But if you were to cover up their names and just read down their policy proposals, you'd be completely unable to tell you if this was like a Bernie or a Warren or a Warren proposal. Right. So they should. I really feel like the socialist, Democrat, progressive movement should hammer this out, because the two of them consolidating, would be the primary.
And I don't know if I want that, you know, as a previous Democratic activist. I also think we can't, the sample size in these three polls we're looking at is not large enough to do further crosstabs. So we can't say like white guys under or white guys 18 to 34. But I would proffer, I would guess that Bernie bros are largely young white college educated or college going men.
Yeah.
And we already know there's a gender gap. And let's go to the next slide and look at the gender. Oh, I'm sorry. Let's stay on age for a moment. Just look at the balance. Now, it's more significant for Elizabeth Warren because she has 35% of the vote. Oh, I know what I did on the total support is I cut Yang and Gabbard off this slide. So I'll fix it before it's posted on the website at aroundthecapitol.com.
How could you cut Yang off the slide?
Because it's easier to look at and they're statistically irrelevant.
Oh.
Gabbard and Yang are, you know, when you get to 3%, you know, it's statistically irrelevant to break it down into categories.
How about Gabbard with the most relevant tweet of the month?
Yeah, check it out. I just saw it and she just goes ape crap over over Hillary.
She's right.
She's got some veracity to that statement.
Here we go.
But so the balance
here we go. I'm just going to read the tweet. Great. Thank you, Hillary Clinton. You, the queen of warmongers, embodiment of corruption and personification of the rot that has sickened the Democratic Party for so long, have finally come out from behind the curtain. From the day I announced my candidacy, there has been a... powerful allies in the corporate media and war machine. Her language is beautiful, man. This is poetry. I'm afraid of the threat that I pose. It's now unclear that this primary is between you and me. My goodness. Don't cowardly hide behind your proxies. Join the race
directly. Hillary, who said no way is she running.
Hey, you know what? But let me tell you, man, this is something just right out of the playbook, right? How do you get some recognition?
This is Gabbard getting headlines.
No, but you always
she made it on the Sacktown Talks by the Nooner podcast. Yeah.
Hey, no, but you
her
always
tweets work.
You always punch up for recognition.
Yeah.
You always punch up for recognition, right? That's why you don't hear me taking a shit on Sacktown 5. That's why you don't hear me taking a shit on Behind the Bill. That's why you don't hear me taking a shit on these other weenie podcasts, right? Okay, they gotta punch up. Yeah, punch up. That's why I'm taking a shit on the people.
Three feces statements.
Okay, but anyways,
like three sentences.
There's a reason I'm going after Willie Brown and Jennifer Siebel Newsom and Tony Atkins and all these. You always punch up for recognition. So, folks, I hope you'll forgive me. But you know, my points were all like well made, and I stand by all the criticisms that I've levied. But there's a reason I'm not like criticizing. Like the only time I've punched down was like Steve Hansen was another one. There's a reason you punch up. You punch up. You pick a fight. You get in someone's face. That's how you get recognized. Man, masterful, masterful, okay?
I'm fixing slides as you're on your rant.
So okay, here we go. Last slide, and we got to get out of here.
Yeah, okay, so this is just the gender mix. I don't know what necessarily to read in it. I mean, Biden's basically, statistically, that's actually performing better than the Democratic Party overall among men. But he's pretty balanced. Pete does overwhelmingly well with men, so I'm not sure that's military. These are California numbers only, obviously. That's gay men, and within the, as we've talked about before, and talking about the CNN town halls within the LGBTQ community, there's not necessarily a flocking of all of the different groups within that community to one gay candidate. Kamala probably has equal support, certainly. Among gays and lesbians in the Bay Area, for example.
Mm.
Bernie, overwhelmingly men. Again, that's young men.
And Warren's the same thing.
Overwhelmingly women. Exactly. So they're interesting numbers. We'll see what happens over the next couple of months.
I feel like Warren gets like the granny librarian vote.
Probably. Yeah. Well, people that like to be talked down to.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. She's got a lot of great ideas, but I still feel like I'm in a law school class being lectured by her, and she was a law professor. So
I
didn't go to Harvard.
She has a real funny relationship with the truth.
I think that's a fair criticism.
It's so weird, you know. It used to be that if you had like 1/16th drop, mm-hmm. if you had like 1/16th of like it was like you were like an octoroon, or it was like these like really terrible things, right?
Right.
That was like those like mulatto rules, those like miscegenation rules, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who's adopting the miscegenation rules now? Is the left. The left is going back to the 1/16th rule, but instead of saying bad, you're saying, oh, I'm Native American.
Right.
For some sort of like careerist advantage. For some sort of like victim advantage, right? That the left loves to give.
Right.
But it was a long time ago that we left these miscegenation rules behind. It was a long time mm-hmm. ago that we stopped counting what percentage of your blood was this or that, until the left brought it back and said, oh, actually, I'm applying for college. I'm 1/84th, you know, Native American. The Pocahontas thing is disqualifying. I'll vote third party before I vote for Warren.
And you have that from a Latino male.
And you have that from a
Latino male. Born in Mexico.
Hey,
brought across the border in his mother's arms. We've heard that.
I didn't come here to be a victim. Huh? I didn't come here to be a victim. I hate this victim politics shit. Enough. Huh? Enough. And for Elizabeth Warren, who is so clearly not a Native American, for it's just on the face of it to be like, oh, actually, I'm a Native American. Yeah. Get out of here.
I'll trust 23andMe. I'm not going to say who is Native American, who's not, because that gets into also all different kinds.
She's not Native American.
Well, I'm just saying that gets into all different kinds of politics as to tribal membership, and I'm not going there.
Why are
these slides particularly important this year when it's not even the presidential year yet, 2019? The fact is that a majority of California voters who will cast their ballots by mail, including all voters in Voters Choice Act counties like Sacramento, will be getting their ballots in their mailboxes on February 4th, the day after the Iowa caucuses, the week before the New Hampshire primaries. So to think like, oh, California, this is early. No, this is actually late. And presidential candidates that aren't paying attention to California aren't working specifically at that congressional district level where they need 15% viability within each of California's 53 congressional districts. They've got to focus now on those areas or they're going to yield no delegates. Right now, Kamala Harris, as we've talked about before on this pod, is in danger of receiving no delegates.
And she's going to look weak for it.
In the March 3rd, 2020 California presidential primary.
All right, my brother, it's been an hour and 15 minutes. And
happy autumn. We're going to go out a little bit more autumn music.
Yeah.
The Kinks.
It is now 6:02. This will be uploaded very shortly. Shortly after uploading this, several hundred of you are going to choose to spend your Friday night with us.
Yeah.
I think that's an incredible compliment. Thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us.
We got to end because my MacBook is at 7% right now. So yeah. We got to wrap this crap up.
All right, my brother.
Hey.
Thank you all.
Good job, man.
Here we go. Boom. My autumn almanac. Breeze blows leaves of the musty color gender.